Hi, this is John Delancey, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me for today's episode is... Fridley Sent, hello.
Hey, I'm first this time.
Yeah.
He looked at me and tried to psych me out about it, too.
Miss Hard Candy Mandy, hello.
Oh, you remembered me.
Yeah, I couldn't forget. And Movie Revolt Dan, hello.
Hey, are we like going back in time? Is this what's happening?
I was trying to do something crazy, no. And today we are delving back into the series on video game film adaptations. Yes, we have not finished that yet. We have not given up. We are seeing it through to the end. Today, the film that is up is the year 2010, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. Obviously, an American action fantasy film based on the video game series of Prince of Persia games. And this one is directed by Mike Newell and starring none other than Jake Gyllenhaal, Ben Kingsley, Alfred Molina, and a bunch of other people that we will probably talk about at some point during the record. So before we get to the actual movie, Amanda, did you ever play the video game series Prince of Persia?
No.
Really? That sounds like something that would be up your alley.
There was like a whole like time period where I did not play video games.
And this was in that time period?
Like, I just got boobs, so I was like out hanging out with people and stuff.
All right, Matt, what about you? Did you play Prince of Persia games?
Actually, I did not play Prince of Persia games, but I have played Prince of Persia The Sands of Time.
Excellent. And what did you think about it?
I always love a game that has a time mechanic. That's if done well, that's one of the funner types of games, if I could say such a sentence. And the fact that it used the... Like, one, it had it as a mechanic where it's like, oh, I didn't do well that fight, I'm just going to rewind time a little bit. But then further, it was like, it explained in-game things. Like, instead of, like, dying, like, you would almost die, and then you'd just reverse, it would just reverse time for you, so you couldn't die. You know, as long as you had enough sand or whatever. And so, like, rather than having just continues and game overs and stuff, it used in-game knowledge to explain a thing out of game that's normally not explained.
So interesting that we have at least one element there that was clearly in both the game and the movies. Dan, did you ever play the Prince of Persia games?
No, I didn't. I didn't have boobs either, but well, not unfortunately. Maybe it depends. But I did play a lot of video games during that period of time. But I never. I watched people play Prince of Persia, but I myself never did. I don't know why. Like I had the system, but it was just a game I look. Oh, that looks like a fun. I should play that. And then now it's like 13 years later, and I still haven't. So
right. So Matt, we'll rely on you a little bit. Obviously, like there is the time element in both the movies and the games. But from your experience playing Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time, how well does the movie line up with it? I mean, can you tell just by watching it that there's things that remind you of the game outside of it being called Prince of Persia?
So there are a number of elements that are very in common, like besides just the sandy dagger, like a lot of the jumping off walls and stuff, like the very acrobatic combat is very right. That game. Like that was like they did a good job of getting the soul of that game. I don't know. I don't remember. I'm not going to lie. It's been, you know, a decade since I played that game. I don't remember if the story at all lines up. You know, with this whole like invasion of a city, and I would argue probably not. But if they don't, you know, lift the story, which again, I mean, a video game, especially in that era, a video game is 30 to 60 hours long, and so trying to condense that down into 2 hours is pretty rough. So just if they at least grab the soul of it, you know, they did a pretty good job of making it feel like Prince of Persia.
Gotcha. It says there was a game that was developed titled Prince of Persia: The Forgotten Sands that was released alongside the film, but it says it was completely unrelated to the first two games, the film or the first two games. It kind of came between the Sands of Time trilogy, I guess. I'm probably speaking nonsense here, but so there was another game that came out alongside the film that had nothing to do with it. interesting that there are some connections. And I would have picked up on that, too, as far as the acrobatics and some of that. Like, when I was watching it, I was like, this feels like something that you probably would have seen in the video game as far as the way that he's jumping and some of the athletic skills that Jake Gyllenhaal has. So I definitely thought that some of the athletic parts were something that I would have expected to see in the video game itself. So when we talk about the film, obviously we're talking about Persia, and we're talking about that time period, and we have like this invasion of a city. We have this street kid, as far as Jake Gyllenhaal's character, Dastin, who gets taken in by the royal family and then gets framed for crimes, etc., and then his kind of adventure to try to get back in good graces and try to right the wrongs and uncover the real villain, I guess, of the story, along with, obviously, like you said, the Sands of Time element with the dagger, etc. So when it comes down to the actual movie, Dan, how do you feel Prince of Persia works as a film?
Man, well, there's the question of the day. It's a movie like this that like kind of makes me really respect a movie like the Pirates of the Caribbean films, because it was clearly trying to ape a lot of what they did, and, you know, similar characters, similar type of action, but you kind of notice the difference between when you have a director who knows how to kind of get that, even compared to a director that maybe doesn't have that capability quite yet. I will say it's not like downright awful. It's not, we by far, looking at the other films that we've done, you know, there's a lot of money behind this. They made an effort. You know, you have some of the special effects are great, but in the simple production design with the amount of extras and things like that, an effort was made, and there's certain like an attempt at like that old school type of mentality, you know, the swashbuckler type of movies that it was trying to go for, but ultimately I think what was really undone by it was an actor I really respected, Jake Gyllenhaal, but just as the main character, he was probably the least interesting thing about it, and it was just a role that I think does not highlight what he's good at as an actor. He's not that charismatic type of, you know, like showboaty type of character. Like, he doesn't work in that role, I don't think. Like, he's better, you know, with more with meatier characters like a Nightcrawler or a Stronger. Like, this is not, I think, what makes him. I think he was trying to be that during this period of time, but after seeing a movie like this, he didn't work, and the love interest aspect of it wasn't all that great. So I think ultimately, just watching it, it's just forgettable in the sense that it just makes me think of other movies that have similar styles that just do it better. But like I said, it's probably the best made out of all of the video game movies we've done, but in a sense, it's almost like it doesn't do much with it. Like a movie with like Double Dragon, it's awful. Like, they didn't put anything behind that. They didn't expect it. Where you can tell, like, they thought this would be the next big thing, but it just didn't have it.
Yeah, they definitely were putting a lot of money towards it. The budget was, you know, between $150 and $200 million. And Disney definitely was trying to have another Pirates of the Caribbean on hand, you know, or something in that yoke. It's interesting, though, that when you bring up Jake Gyllenhaal. So do you think, like, speaking of Pirates of the Caribbean, like, did they need somebody Johnny Depp style like that Pirates had? Or do they need someone like maybe like a Harrison Ford like Indiana Jones had? Is that what this was missing? Someone that had that charisma? I mean, among a few other things, obviously. But is that one of the biggest hang-ups for you?
I think it would have helped, because you think of, like, you know, Pirates has Johnny Depp in that role, and they have Orlando Bloom. Like, Jake Gyllenhaal could do that Orlando Bloom character, but there wasn't that. There are some, like, Alfred Molina's character was probably, like, my favorite part of the movie. But if they had, like, I think he was just not a big enough role. They were, I think, missing something like that to make it work. In my opinion.
Interesting. And we'll get more into the details here in a second, but I want to get everybody else's, bring them in on it and kind of get their overall view. So starting with you, Matt, you know, you like the fantasy realm, and obviously this has a touch of that, like most of the video game films have, but did this film work for you as a movie, or did you have some issues with it?
So, like, I think Dan got it. Like, it's like a crappier Pirates of the Caribbean. I think that if I saw it in the theaters where I didn't have my cell phone, I couldn't be distracted by anything, I think I would enjoy it. I'd be like, yeah, it was an okay movie. But I just think, like, next to a lot of other movies, even movies from the same time period, it just doesn't stack up. Like, it's good. It's serviceable. It's probably the best made video game movie that we've seen. And then on top of it, it, you know, draws from the video game, unlike, say, like a Mario, which, like, is just, like, nonsense compared to the game. I don't know if it's as entertaining as a Mario or a Double Dragon or a Street Fighter. Like, those are all great. And maybe not for the right reasons or the intended reasons, but like as far as just being like rating it as a movie, it's probably the best one. I mean, maybe Tomb Raider, the original Tomb Raider, but like it is just like Tomb Raider is not as good Indiana Jones. This is not as good Pirates of the Caribbean or King Arthur or any of those fantasy tales.
Amanda, agree or disagree? For the record. Did manage to put you to sleep, right?
3 times.
Okay.
Oh, man.
It took us all week to watch this freaking thing. Aladdin meets Assassin's Creed is exactly what this movie was. Why was everybody yellow? Everybody was yellow. Everything had, like, this yellowish tint. I didn't like it. I didn't believe that they were Persians, except for what they were wearing.
I was going to say yellow. They're all white, not Persian.
They were all yellow looking. Like, everybody had, like, a jaundice.
That was their attempt to make them.
They all just got real friggin' jaundice for this film. A lot of eyeliner. And then Jake Gyllenhaal's hairy pits everywhere I turned. It was just insane. And it was forgettable. It did have some really cool production, though. Like, we talked about, had that Disney money behind it. So, it benefited from that. And I think Jake Gyllenhaal was okay, but I wasn't super entertained by him or this, you know, chump-ass love story they tried to throw in here and all her struggling sounds every 3 seconds. I don't know. It was kind of the movie wasn't really a mess, but it wasn't as engaging as I wanted it to be.
Yeah, I think I agree with most of what's been said by all three of you. I'm going to take it a step further, though, because I think they had... they had the money behind it, and like Matt was saying, they had some of the video game aspects as far as, you know, just crazy action type sequences with people doing things that, you know, obviously normal human beings can't do that you would see in a video game. It does have the time element with the cool little dagger thing and whatnot, although I don't know if the best setup is it's only kind of go back a minute. That doesn't seem to be a lot of time to do anything, but I think the main problem with me for this film is almost 100% in all of the casting. Like, the entire cast, to me, for the most part, with a few exceptions, just doesn't fit what they needed for this film to work. Dan hit part of it right on the head. You know, you need somebody charismatic in that main role. If you're going to try to start a franchise, which is clearly what they wanted a series of Prince of Persia films. I don't think Jake Gyllenhaal was the right person to carry that. He's a great actor and a good at a lot of things, but what Dan was saying was perfect. He's not that charismatic person that's going to carry this type of franchise. And I think you could take it a step further. I think there were just so many people that you weren't memorable, that you weren't going to latch onto in their various roles. I think I think Ben Kingsley is a terrible casting in this film. And obviously Ben Kingsley's great at a lot of things too, but you put him in this film and it's so obvious that just by casting Ben Kingsley, everything is predictable in this entire film. And you know exactly what route it's going to go down. And I think they could have done that better by having that a little bit more hidden, by casting someone that wasn't so obviously going to play that same role that we've seen from him so many times. I just think the casting...
He was Persian Uncle Scar.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the casting overall was not very good. Not to mention, obviously,
the fact... At least he showed up this time.
Yeah, show up.
He moved out of a throne.
And there was a stunt double probably kicking people and doing stuff. He was involved in some action sequences.
Yeah, he did some stuff.
So, I mean, I'll give him that. He wasn't just walking around a room or whatnot. But I just think the casting from almost start to finish, with maybe Alfred Molina as an exception, and we did get a very early version of Toby Kebbell in here, too, which was interesting. But I definitely didn't know who Toby Kebbell was when this movie came out, but now. But I just think casting overall in general was a fail on this film. But we'll kind of bounce off that, Dan, or what things did work for you, or what other things did?
Like, you know, this is Sands of Time, and they have that, like, that turning back time element, and I think it was something they could have utilized a little bit more. Like, the one sequence where you have that, like, snake attack, and he uses it, like, it's probably the best action sequence in the movie, and I felt like they could do, like, it could have been, I don't know, like, even when they were using it the first time, it wasn't really clear what was happening, like, in a way. And the action itself, like, you know, this is coming out when, well, parkour is, you know, already really kind of passe, but still, it's basically that, and it, none of the acrobatics in the movie felt real. They felt like very stagey, like almost wire work. The slow motion when they used it, I think, if anything, hurt it, because it just made it seem like slow moving and plodding rather than athletic. So it, like, some of those movements where you see him kind of going up things and jumping around, it, I don't know, like, we've had movies like, thinking of like the Casino Royale and other, there's like the District B-13 films that are utilize that same type of maneuvers and do it a lot more with not nearly the budget this has. And I think, like, if that's going to be your thing, you can make it work, but it didn't. But, you know, we did get ostrich races, so I think that's there was something to say there. I mean, I there was some benefit. I did like not just his performance. I did kind of like Alfonso Molina's character. This, like, the concept of trying to create this story behind his land just to not pay taxes. I don't know. It was the one bit of comedic charm that the film needed that, like, worked for me. But that's kind of the thing that really disappointed me the most. I thought we'd at least get some interesting action, but all the action was just kind of dull.
Alfred Molina's character reminded me so much of what's his name from Indiana Jones but that kind of side character that they need to kind of get them from one place to another, but he, you know, instills that comedy and then things like that. So, but I did enjoy his character. Matt, anything that worked for you in this film?
Oh, like what Dan just said, like the Molina scenes were great. Like I literally texted in a group text I have with a couple of friends, like, man, this movie really picked up when the ostriches showed up. Because that whole ostrich, like, scene was so much fun and so interesting. And I kind of, like, once he got added, it became a little more interesting because it was a little more of a, like that fantasy ensemble bit where it's like, okay, so now we've got, like, now rather than just having, like, the unspoiled prince and the spoiled princess or whatever their dynamic is supposed to be, like, now we've got, like, this seedy traitor who's funny, and then also we've got this, like, bounty hunter headsman guy, like, who's a running, like, who's the best warrior in the whole movie filled with warriors, but is also a running joke. Like, have you heard of these guys? Like, so, like, it wasn't terrible, it just wasn't amazing.
I like, too, that there was an element that I never thought of when it comes to, like, desert films or films set in, you know, these types of things. There's a moment where, like, there's a party, like a search party out looking for Jake Gyllenhaal's character. And it's like, hey, we're in the desert, so all we have to do is, like, duck. Like, there's hills, they'll never see us. Like, we're fine. We can have our little picnic over here and they'll never know we're over here. Just duck real quick. So that was kind of interesting. Can anybody explain the ending of this film to me? I don't know if I wasn't paying enough attention, but obviously the film leads up to a climactic showdown between Jake Gyllenhaal and Ben Kingsley and the dagger, et cetera, and I have no idea what happened. I have no idea what the explanation was for what was happening.
So pushing the sword through the wall causes the sand to come out and the time to go back, but you're only supposed to do it for so long. Then there was a tornado, and I don't know why Jake Gyllenhaal went back and Ben Kingsley didn't. I don't know, because he left. Yeah, it was just kind of a mess. And I was expecting Ben Kingsley and him to kind of like go back to the same time. And then like they're trying to like it becomes time cop, because that would be great. But that's not what happened.
I was just like, I didn't get it, because like they put it in the wall of the glass, and then but then he was releasing the end of it so it would come out, and then he stopped it, and then glass was shattering, but it wasn't, and then they went flying off into the edge, and then all of a sudden, like you said, Ben Kingsley was not back in time, but Jake Gyllenhaal was, and now we can make everything fine again. Matt, did you make heads or tails of how that whole thing ended, or was it just like, hey, we need to be at the end of the movie, so let's do this?
So she set it up earlier by saying, if you like. If it's in the glass and you push the button, you could reverse time as much as possible. But if you opened up the dagger while it was in the glass, it would destroy the world.
Right.
And it seemed
and they started
like,
destroying the world at some point.
It seemed like they just ignored that setup. Sort of like having a Chekhov's gun that's a pistol and then an Act 3 shooting a rifle. Where it's like, we set up that the guns existed, right? Like, because, yeah, it did just start to destroy the world, but no one was taking the cap off. Like, I could have seen if, like, Ben Kingsley was trying to unscrew the cap and Gyllenhaal was trying to, to screw it back on or something. But, like, yeah, like, they established how it worked, and then it worked differently.
It's just like, okay, I guess I'll go with it because I want the movie to be over now. But
is Ben Kingsley good in any movie? Because, like, it was literally, like... They're like, hey, this town is smuggling weapons. I was like, no, it's not. It's Ben Kingsley. Like, I was 2 seconds into this movie, and I was like, no, Ben Kingsley is evil. Like, that's, like, I know it's not even this Richard the Great-looking dude, like, this King Arthur-looking Persian. It's just Ben Kingsley's evil, right?
It was weird. Even when he played Gandhi, he turned out to be the bad guy.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like it was bad casting. Like, you have to cast someone else in this role so we don't obviously know who the person is that's at fault, you know, or the villain type role. Amanda, what did you think? Anything else, notes that you had or something you liked or didn't like that you wanted to bring up?
I had like 3 lines of notes.
And most of them were about Jake Gyllenhaal's hairy armpits.
Basically. But was his hair and his head real?
I doubt it.
I think that the costumes were good.
Costumes good.
In addition to the production value. I didn't like all the fucking snakes. Not cool. I'm going to have nightmares about that.
It's weird, though, because the action, like Dan was saying, like, it was so crazy that it did seem unreal. Like, it did seem out of a video game, which maybe is a good thing, but then also at times was a bad thing because you're like, oh, that's really cheesy-looking action sequence or CG or visual effects. So it was kind of like a, I don't know which way to take it. Is it good because it looks more like it's something you'd see out of a video game, or is it bad because it looks like it's so forced? I wasn't quite sure on that. As far as, like, the actual reception goes, Rotten Tomatoes, it currently has a 36%. On Rotten Tomatoes, the consensus states it doesn't offer much in the way of substance, but Prince of Persia is a suitably entertaining swashbuckler and a substantial improvement over most video game adaptations. So that's what Rotten Tomatoes had to say. As far as a box office, like I said, it cost about 150 to 200 million, but it made more than that. It made 336 million. That's worldwide, but it was considered to be somewhat of a bomb as far as Disney's aspirations to create like another Pirates of the Caribbean type franchise. Interesting stats for you guys. See what you think about this, but it opened number 3 at the box office the weekend it came out behind. Let's see what else was happening this year. Number 2 at the box office for that weekend was Sex and the City 2, and number 1 was Shrek Forever After. So that's what beat it in its opening weekend. Here's a stat for you.
And that was a weekend to go to the movies, huh? Jeez.
I don't think I went to the movies that weekend, actually. I stayed away from those. Interesting note, though, when it comes to our video game films overall, because for a long time, this was the number 1 box office king when it came to video game films worldwide. It is not anymore, though. Any ideas as to who is number 1 worldwide when it comes to video game films?
It's got
to
be Assassin's Creed, right?
Nope.
No, it's Warcraft now, right? Because of China?
Oh.
Yep. Warcraft is currently worldwide at the number 1 spot. Followed, if you're just taking live action, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time would be number 2 worldwide. Wow. Prince of Persia, yeah. Prince of Persia also number 2 when it comes to domestic gross, but there is a different film that is ahead of it domestically. Wise. Does anybody want to take a stab as to which film domestically is above Prince of Persia?
Is it one of the Resident Evil movies or Mortal Kombat?
Tomb Raider?
It is Tomb Raider. So Lara Croft Tomb Raider is the number 1 domestic video game film, and then Prince of Persia would be number 2. So Prince of Persia is 2 both domestic-wise and worldwide. Does that surprise any of you guys as far as how much money it was able to make? Because it made $131 million domestic.
Like, yeah, not too much, because like I said, I think a lot of people were like, oh, it's going to be like Pirates of the Caribbean, but like it obviously didn't do as well, so I think that's probably a big reason.
Matt, what do you think? Are you surprised that it's number 2, both worldwide and domestic?
That's funny. But, like, when you add in the fact that it's newer than a lot of them, although, I mean, it's still 20 years old, dang.
we're all old.
Wait, this is, what?
Oh, wait, no, this is 8 years old. I'm thinking of the other movie we talked about recently. Ignore me. but if you consider, like, what did you say it made?
135 for domestic and about 330-something for worldwide.
When you compare that to the King Arthur movie that came out just last year, where, like, it didn't even make the domestic number worldwide. Like, and it's like, that movie was easily as good. And I mean, I would say King Arthur has more star power and more appeal than a Prince of Persia game. So, like, I guess it's surprising on that level. Because it doesn't stand out in any way, so I can't imagine people were talking it up to their friends.
How about a crazy cross-connection between our two series going on currently? Because our latest Kevin Smith episode that was being produced from us and put out live was our Dogma episode. How about in Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, the fact that Alanis Morissette composed the theme song for the film? So there's a thing. It's all full circle. So let's get closing thoughts and grades for Prince of Persia, and where is it stacking up as we get closer and closer to having to figure out a ranking system for our video game films. Dan, we'll start with you.
Oh, no, we're starting with me. Jeez. Okay. one thing we didn't talk about is, like, watching this, I felt legitimately bad for Gemma Arterton. Mm-hmm. Just, like, I felt she was being just harassed this entire movie by people, and this, like, the comments that were made towards her from Jake Gyllenhaal to, like, the scene where she's handing out, like,
fermented goat's milk or whatever
it was. Yeah. And she's, like, being assaulted, and they're, like, laughing at her, like, oh, look at her. I'm like, what did she do? Like, I felt legitimately bad. Like, everyone was just saying, like, just creepy things towards her all the time. I was like,
welcome to my world.
I did not treat you like Jake Gyllenhaal treated her.
No, but everywhere I go, people say creepy shit to me.
Awful. Well, that's awful. Yeah, you should make them Rockford. Watch this movie.
It's Rockford, so.
Oh, is that man. Part of Wisconsin? Is that
no?
Hey.
No.
but yeah, like and then again, her and Jake Gyllenhaal had like legitimately like zero chemistry whatsoever. So at least, like, her character had something to do, per se, but ultimately, it was just, yeah, man. It's, I guess, like, when this feels like a movie that no one in it really wanted to be a part of, ultimately. like, people did it because they thought, like, okay, like, we need one of these movies. Like, Disney made it because they could care less really about the video game, but they're trying to create another franchise, and it just didn't happen. Like, it felt like no one was there because they really cared much about what they were trying to make.
It was almost like, hey, Disney's doing this franchise. We're going to throw our name in there just in case it's successful so we can make a bunch of money, but none of us are going to do anything to make it successful.
Yeah. So it just, again, it's like, it doesn't fail in an interesting way, and there's something, fundamentally, I think, works. The plot isn't, like, it's predictable, but it at least is coherent. So I think ultimately it's more like a 6 out of 10 for me because it's not awful. It's just, you know, if this wasn't a video game movie, probably no one would even think about it because it'd be among a lot of other films that are just like this.
Amanda, what do you think? Any final thoughts on what kind of grade would you give this one?
I think I've said everything I need to say about this movie.
Not a big fan.
I mean, it was okay. It couldn't even keep me awake. So I'm gonna give it about a 5. It's just there.
I think for me, it's kind of playing that dangerous game because it's not something that you're gonna like because of how bad it is. It's, you know, it's not like it's so cheesy or it's so off the wall and saying that you're gonna give it extra points. It's a legit trying to be, you know, somewhat of serious film for the most part as far as like what it was trying to achieve. So it has that almost going against it, but it is, like Dan was saying, it's probably one of the better made or maybe even the best made films that we've seen. So for that, I feel like it should be at least in the top half when you're ranking all this stuff. But it fails in some of the ways that could really elevate it. So I think I'm right with Dan. I'm going to give this one a 6. What do you think, Matt?
It's right there. It's middling. Like it does some things. It does a number of things okay. It doesn't do anything super well.
Right.
But I mean, I guess just to be that guy, I'm gonna give it a 6 with the other guys.
Excellent. So pretty unanimous. 5s and 6s here for Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time. We still have a little bit of time to figure out where exactly it will fall amongst the video game films that we've covered. But that leads us to briefly talk about what's coming up next, guys. Next up on our video game film series is the one and only 2014 film Need for Speed. Amanda, excitement level?
Never seen it. Don't know if I should be excited or not.
Did you play the game?
No.
I did play the game somehow, randomly. Not very much. I wouldn't be able to tell you much about it, but I do remember selling the game to people at Target, and I do remember, I think I either watched someone play it or I played it once upon a time. Matt, what's your anticipation level, and did you ever play Need for Speed?
I definitely have played it, not high anticipation.
Dan, what about you?
I don't need it. I don't need it at all.
You don't need the speed.
I don't need the speed at all. I did play the game. I actually played it recently. I have it for my Xbox One. I like have the, I think, the older version for it. I just remember playing it because like you could run away from the cops, and before Grand Theft Auto was a thing, it was a lot more enjoyable than there. But yeah, I remember seeing in that, looking at the previews, thinking this looks like a low rent Fantastic Four. Jeez, a low rent Fast and the Furious movie. And don't ever want to see it, but hey, now I am. So there's that.
There is that. Originally, kind of side note, this would have been the final movie in our video game film series when we started this out, because it was going to lead us into the movies that were being released that year, which were Warcraft and Assassin's Creed. We didn't quite get through it in time to kind of do that, so I guess we still have to cover those two films, I guess. Maybe we'll debate that off air and see if we want to do that or not. But Need for Speed from 2014 is the next one on the list. So you'll have to let us know if you agree or disagree with our take on Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time as we get very close to wrapping up this video game spotlight. You can also interact with us directly as a show. You can tweet to us at CinemaGeekCast. Or if you want to talk to any one of us individual or pose a question to one of us, you can do that as well. Amanda, how would somebody interact with you?
At Hard Candy Mandy Eyes, No Lies.
Matt, what about you?
I'm at Fridley Sent.
Dan?
I'm at Movie Revolt.
And I am at Optimus Solo. So definitely keep those comments coming to us either on the website, Facebook, Twitter, etc., on your thoughts of the video game series. Also keep out the lookout for the other episode I mentioned as we were going through our Kevin Smith filmography, and we just put out an episode recently on Dogma, so check that out. And keep tuned for some fun things coming up here in 2018 as we kind of venture into some other types of episodes that we'll be giving you guys as well. So that does it for this week. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to the Cinema Geeks.